name's Tom. If you're here for the, if you're visiting friends or you're here for the first time, part of the team here, it's a great honor to be able to share a thought from the Bible, bring a message. Today, we are continuing in a kind of theme around vision. Last week, as a church, we gathered and heard the vision. And then this week, we're thinking, what does it mean to live the God's life? So Mick spoke last week about our vision for 2020, which is join us for the better life. The topic is the God life. And I'm mindful of it, something that I witnessed probably around about 11 years ago. I was at a conference in London. And as Alan Partridge once said, go to London, I guarantee you'll be mugged or not appreciated. The conference was at the Royal Albert Hall. And I had some very good friends from Theological College who lived very close by. And rather than pay out for a hotel, I thought it'd be a good idea to reacquaint ourselves. And could I get some free accommodation? And they're so kind, they let me stay there for free, praise God, right in the heart of Knightsbridge. And I noticed something really interesting. The next morning, I slept well. They very kindly had laid out some breakfast and said, well, we have to get the kids off to school. And something remarkable came over my incredible friends, just beautiful, beautiful people. And it was like something changed in them, something, their behavior changed, their whole demeanor changed. And it was something called the school run. And all of a sudden, these people who were just incredibly relaxed, incredibly mild-mannered, incredibly confident, their house, which had been one of peace and tranquility the time that I'd arrived, was now total bedlam. My friend's wife, who's an incredibly godly woman, was shouting like a drill sergeant, we need to go now! Get down here! It was just absolute. And I sat eating the breakfast, just thinking, this cannot be. Cannot be normal. This cannot be right. This cannot be how people live. Surely. It was just a whirlwind. It was like something possessed them. And what I noticed about the children is a lethargy came over them that they didn't seem to be on the same page. Like suddenly playing this, I want to read a story, or I need to go to the toilet, and doing a number two seemed to take a very long time before heading out to school. And then fast forward 10, 12 years, I find myself in that situation. And I often remember back then thinking, this can't be like it is. And then now I find myself, like, you know, if you ever watch a film, and it's like a war film or it's an army film, and they're about to jump out of a plane, and the person shouts, go, go, go. That's like us. It's like literally, I'm grabbing particularly our son, and it's like I'm throwing him out the door. Go, 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 we are late. Go, and we are going to school. And what could be a time of great fatherly bonding and a time of reflecting and giving thanks in all circumstances is me walking. And because kids, their legs are little, so they have to go twice as fast, don't they? But we're running late, we're up against it. And he's going, my legs don't work, my feet don't work. I'm healed in Jesus' name, we need to get to school. And there are those moments when you hear the bell and you're a little way off. You're like, oh, God, help us. And latterly, particularly with our son, he hasn't really wanted to stay there because at school you can't play all the time, and he feels that's most unfair. And a few times he said to the teaching assistant, I think it's time for me to go home. And they've had to explain to him. Actually, it doesn't quite work like that. Very sweetly, they said he would just say, I think I've done today. It's time. Could I go home now? And they're like, no, you can't. You've got to stay. So there are times when we take him to school, he is clamped around my leg as it's time to go, and you peel him off. And then I look to the eye of somebody to come rescue me, and you walk out the door. And sometimes as I walk away, there is that moment where you think, is he going to be all right? There's sometimes those moments where you think, am I doing all right at this? It seems to have got really stressed again. I'm already cut out for this. It's about worry. All of us experience worry. All of us do. And this is what Jesus has to say. You can't worship two gods at once. It's from Matthew chapter 6, verses 24. You can't worship two gods at once. Loving one God, you'll end up hating the other. Adoration of one feeds contempt for the other. You can't worship God and money both. If you decide to live for God, living a life of God worship, it follows that you don't fuss about what's on the table at mealtimes or whether the clothes in your closets are in fashion. There is far more to your life than the food you put in your stomach, more to your outer appearance than the clothes you hang on your body. Look at the birds, free and unfettered, not tied down to a job description, careless in the care of God. And you count far more to him than birds. Has anyone, by fussing in front of the mirror, ever gotten taller by so much as an inch? All this time and money wasted on fashion, do you think it makes much difference? Instead of looking at the fashions, walk out into the fields and look at the wild flowers. They never primp or shop, but have you ever seen colour and design quite like it? The 10 best dressed men and women in the country look shabby alongside them. If God gives such attention to the appearance of wild flowers, most of which are never seen, don't you think he'll attend to you? Take pride in you. Do his best for you. What I'm trying to do here is to get you to relax, to not be so preoccupied with getting so that you can respond to God's giving. People who don't know God and the way he works fuss over these things, but you know both God and how he works. Steep your life in God reality, God initiative, God provisions. Don't worry about missing out. You'll find all your everyday human concerns will be met. Give your entire attention to what God is doing right now. And don't get worked up about what may or may not happen tomorrow. God will help you with whatever hard things come up when the time comes. I often find myself walking away from the school drop-off, caught in worry. Now, worry is a continuum. It starts with a sense of concern. Concern is perfectly normal. If you go home today and you walk into your house and it smells of gas, the last thing you're going to do is say, hey, there's a gas leak, let's just light up and just chill. You're just not going to do it. If you get into the car and it starts making a banging sound, that's a concern. Or you find a lump or something in the body just doesn't work like it used to. They're all normal, natural concerns. It may be that you are concerned for somebody that you love. It may be that you're concerned for a situation tomorrow at work. It may be you're concerned about a friend. It may be you're concerned about your marriage. It may be that you've got a concern around your children. Life is full of concerns. They're perfectly normal and perfectly natural. But concern on that continuum can move into worry. And worry can begin to think about a sense of nervousness, a kind of dwelling on something, a real concern around tomorrow and the future. In fact, the word worry in its old English translation comes from this idea to choke or to strangle. And yet every one of us faces worry. And I think in church life, talking of worry can be a bit of a challenge. Because today we're going to talk about the God life, and it can feel a little bit like the life that I think about and worry about, and the kind of God life, the life of victory and breakthrough. And yet they think, well, I've checked the bank balance, but I'm going to have to go to a home group, and they ask me how I'm going to be doing. It's the best life ever. But we all experience it. Conversations that we have both within church and outside of church with people that we meet, worry can often be a dominant theme. It's so easy for us as believers to be like the preacher I once heard Adrian Plass talk about many years ago. He did a sketch about a preacher and it went like this. I don't worry because I have God. I have God, so I do not worry. If you have God, you will not worry. Then afterwards, he got off the platform and he said to me, I'm really worried about how that went. We can experience worry. Just for a moment now, what's on your mind? Seriously, what's on your mind? I've been worrying about this talk for weeks. What's on your mind? I love this quote from Corrie ten Boom. Worry does not empty tomorrow of its sorrow. It empties today of its strength. But Jesus challenges it, and we have it. So what do? Well, Jesus offers us almost two visions of life. He offers us a life of simple, beautiful trust in him, and a life serving, in this version of the Bible, what we call money, or that we get the word mammon, which is an Aramaic word. And it's been translated wealth. Now you might think, well, hey, I'm not a banker. My life is not about serving money. I'm not a corporate lawyer. Apologies to any corporate lawyers here. I don't earn over the kind of higher tax bracket. I don't live in the South. That's a joke, but hey, okay, that didn't work. You might think, you know, I work for charity. I work in public sector. I'm not after money. So what Jesus is saying doesn't affect me, really, because I'm not living for money. But actually, the word mammon is translated into a broader sense. So let me ask you a question. Who here owns a property? You own a property. Raise a hand if you can. So some say that this word mammon, it broadens out to a definition about property or possessions. Hands up if you own stuff. Yeah? Okay, so we own stuff. Okay, say you own a property. Has anyone got a leak right now? So Jesus is beginning to say, it's not just about money, it's about if you own stuff, if you've accrued stuff, if you have stuff. And I'm not going to ask you this next question, but say if you own somewhere and you've gone to somebody else's house, maybe they've bought a forever house. That's a thing, isn't it now? And you've gone in there and you thought, man, their house is much better than mine. Or somebody's just got that new car, that new Audi. Oh man, they are nice. And have you ever found yourself thinking, that is a nice car? Or you ever find yourself looking on Pinterest or looking through how you can improve what it is that you own, or you have a sense of dissatisfaction about what it is you have? It's what Jesus says. We cannot be a slave to money. He's calling us not to be a slave to the things that we own. You see, slavery controls us. And slavery dominates our thoughts and our devotion. The life of a slave is to serve something. And Jesus says this. If we pursue possessions, if we pursue material things, they take over. If we worship them, I mean, we'd never ever admit that we worship our homes. We'd never ever admit that we worship our cars. But the same language Jesus is using around devotion, that a slave is fixated on one thing, and that is to do something for their master. And he said, this will take mastery of your life. Why? Because the word that Jesus uses for worry, he uses it 6 times. Some people say this passage isn't about worry, but in the 10 verses we're reading, Jesus says it 6 times. It's merineo. And it means this, to be double-minded or to be distracted, to experience a sense of divide. So here's the thing. Every day, every time you switch on the TV, every time we turn on our phone, we experience what is known as the propaganda of the soul. It's said that the average child sees 3,000 marketing images a day. 3,000 different images, different brands. Every time we go to Meadow Hall, walk into a shop, every time that Fat Face magazine comes through the letterbox and we go through it, it is subtly, very, very subtly, offering us a different version of life. A life of consumption. A life of choice. You see, we are designed. The system which we find ourselves in is designed to make us worry. It is designed to elicit from us a sense of dissatisfaction. So we have a choice. We can fill it with stuff. Or Jesus, by contrast, is bringing to us a picture of the Father. One of trust. One of provision. He says, look at the birds. Look how he provides for them. In contrast, how precious are you? Look at their carefree existence, that he has that for us. It's gifted to us. Does it mean that we're going to open up our wardrobe and find 10 Armani suits? Maybe. He has provided for us everything that we need, that he will give to us everything that we need. So how do we do that? How do we function in a way that we're not given over to worrying about stuff if everything around us is designed to make us worry? The world in which we live, the strings are pulled by the enemy of God, who loves to instill in us a sense of fear and a sense of lack. How do we do it? Well, this is the one thing I'm learning to do, and that is switch out the sauce. Now, our children are fine connoisseurs of sauce. And for years, they'd only ever eat Heinz ketchup. Now, when my wife came back from Aldi with the Bramwell's special, they were a little bit reluctant to try it. In fact, when they did try it, they were convinced that it was inferior and it was not of the Lord, so they wouldn't have it. So my wife, being smart, when the Heinz just began to run down, she'd just top it up with Bramwell's. Well, they lapped it up. She's a nurse. Every time I go to get some anodyne, I double check with a magnifying glass, make sure she's not switched out any medication at home. If I disappear, I'm just telling you now, okay? Because if she could, there's form, okay? There's a legal argument now. I just want to be up front right now. But switching out. So we noticed that a barbecue once, that because kids love a bit of peer pressure, and these guys, some friends of Chris's, well, put on the Bramwells, and they were eating, didn't say a thing. So we thought, well, they can do it. So how do it? We switch it out. So switching out the sauce, what does that mean? It means this. What is the thing that triggers worry for me? What is the thing that triggers worry for you? When are those moments where you're more aware of worry? Is it when you see that person and they just get under your skin? Is it when you watch something? Is it when you go to that person's house, their forever house, and it's worth, you know, a lot more than yours, or somebody's just rocked up and they got that brand new car or whatever? What is it that sets you off down a track of worrying? Because it's important to ask those questions, because worry forms a habit. Paul says this in Philippians, do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. James 4:8 says, draw near to God and he will draw close to you. So what is it, the thing that sets you off? Right now, as you think about life and the stuff that you're carrying and worrying, is it when you see other people's children and they just seem to be experiencing third heaven and prophetic words and you don't want to come to church anymore? Is it in the cluster that somebody else is doing something, or somebody else's marriage? What is it? What is it that means that you go there with worry? Because we all have something that sets us off. There's a beautiful Psalm 73. And it's probably a priest who writes this, but he says this. He's looking at people who don't necessarily live for God. And he says, all these years I've slaved, and they just seem to be getting richer and richer, and my life is a mess. And then there's a punchline. It says this, until I stand in the presence of God. There's a theologian by the name of Blaise Pascal, and he says this, that we have a God-shaped hole in our life that only Jesus can fill the very heart of our soul. Only in his presence does everything make sense. When we stand in the presence of God, life takes on a new perspective. The presence of God brings perspective. The praise of God brings clarity to a new situation. There's a man called Brother Lawrence who was a monk. And he couldn't quite figure out how when he was in the prayer room on his knees in the chapel, he was with God. But when he was washing up, he wasn't with God. And he had a breakthrough moment, and a book has been written called Practicing the Presence of God, that he realized in that moment that the situation that he was in could be redeemed, because as he was working, his work could become and was his worship. As he was washing up, he was in the presence of God. He switched out the source. And what does that mean, to switch out the source? It is a massive temptation, I think, for Christians, myself included. I'm naturally a very intense person. So if I know there's an area of deficiency in my life, of which there is a shed load, just to be brutally honest with you, I know that I can become fixated. And sometimes, if I'm honest, as a church, we have that thing, don't we? What is God saying to you? What are you going to do about it? Oh, my goodness. Or we have the learning circle, don't we? Observe, reflect, discover. Where are you on the circle? I don't know. Well, what are you doing? Where's your sin issue today, brother? And what are you going to do about it? Do you know what I mean? It's like, it can be intense, right? Church life can feel intense. Or is it just me? It can feel intense. So in some sense, we could see switching out the source as in like, oh no, I've got to switch it out, and I've got to change it, and I've got to do this. No. Because Jesus says, he describes all the things that distract us, and he says, seek first the kingdom. We're called to seek him in any and every situation. And my understanding, the way I have interpreted that, and I could be totally wrong, so if I am, you need to come and tell me. But is to say in the situation, Lord, I'm racked with worry about this, Lord. This is dominating my thoughts. This has become an issue for me. In fact, I'm almost worshipping the issue because I'm focusing on this. Jesus, will you just have mercy on me? And it could be, I don't know, in the workplace, I don't have a proper job. I work one day a week, so I've no idea what it's like. I can't imagine for some of you in the office tomorrow, you just start giving it large like this. I just can't imagine it. But it could be that there are moments in the day where you sense that trigger. And you think, okay, what is it? How am I going to switch out my source? My usual way of thinking about stuff is unhelpful. What would it look like in the mornings and the commutes? I know first thing in the morning, I am prone to worry. I know the morning dog walk is when I can think about the day. I can think about what happened yesterday. And the morning dog walk can go one of two ways. It can be a time when one is praising and praying and excited for the day, or it's the one where I can start off and feel more stressed by the end of it. And the dog's done another poo and I didn't bring enough poo bags. And oh, he's got to do this and I've got to do that. There are two ways it can go. So what in your pattern of work, in your busy lives or whatever, where are you triggered and where can you switch out the source? And in focusing upon Jesus, it is inviting us to embrace that God life, inviting us to embrace the kingdom. Where the kingdom is, we worship the King. And when we remind ourselves that he runs it, I don't need to run it. I can relinquish control because it's his kingdom. He's in charge. In worship, we are reminded that it's about him and his grace and his love and his delight over his people. Switching out the source is the invitation to embrace the perfect Father again, to restore our perspective. And if we take Brother Lawrence's wisdom in the everyday, normal stuff of life. I shared this on Thursday, and a friend came to me on the team, and he said, I didn't really understand some of what you said, which is hugely encouraging as you're about to go into a weekend. But he asked me this question. He said, what does it look like to switch out the source and do the school run? And you know, if I'm honest, I couldn't totally answer him without being trite. And it bugged me. And this is what I reflected. I don't know whether this makes sense. Switching out the source for me on the school run. And I say this with awe, love, and caution. It means this, that I have to surrender my desire to be a perfect father to my children. Because if I'm not careful, my worry for them can mean I'm placing them. Helen said they're a gift from the Lord. But we're called to worship the gift giver, Jesus, not to worship my children. That may sound a little weird saying that. I think as a society and a culture, we've got ourselves in a problem. Because somewhere in the pecking order, the kids are really high, too high. So for me, it means I have to embrace that I will mess stuff up as I do. I won't always be a perfect dad. I'm not always a perfect dad. So I have to say, Lord, as I'm switching out my own source, I'm probably going to blow a gasket, Lord, today, because my son wants to do a wee outside school. It's not good. We find alleyways now. If you're around Lydia, I can show you some secret places you could do. Why didn't you go to a wee? I asked you and you lied to me. I'm probably going to blow a gasket. You're going to see us, and I'm going to be dragging him. You can see my son. He wears an orange parka. He looks like Kenny off South Park. He'll be kind of. This is going to happen because it's life. So I can say, Jesus, I'm going to rest in your grace, or I can be bound by my sense of performance. Jesus, I want to do the best I can, but Jesus, you're going to have to help me. No matter how many self-help courses, whatever books you read to make you do it better, which actually make you feel worse. Jesus, I'm not perfect. And it's grace, and it's beautiful. That's the first thing, how it changes the school run. Is going in a way that is not bound by fear to law and performance. But one says, do you know, Lord, I'm going to mess it up, but you still love me. And Jesus, I pray for the kids that I don't mess them up in the process and you intervene. And then it means that when I walk away and I've lost my rag, I say to Jesus, Jesus, I'm sorry for doing that. I just want to switch out the source right now. For the few minutes I've got before I go and stand in front of the staff team and lead us into the presence feeling like a hypocrite. Say, Jesus, I'm saved by grace. Will you help me? And do you know what struck me about this? As I wrestled with this message, and I was like, oh, I don't know if it's right. I was walking through Crooks and I saw somebody I know from school, and he's so bound by worry. And I thought that worry pulls us away. It keeps us inward. It keeps us looking down. It can take us back to a sense, I've got to try and fix this. I've got to try and strive. And I thought, no, I want the school run to be an opportunity where I can meet people. And I can be available for God to use, to bless. And if I'm stressed with my own performance, whether I'm worrying or not, I'm not able to to look around. What would it look like for wherever you are to switch out that source, to take a hold perhaps where worry has been like that word it's translated, that kind of a grip around life. And you begin to switch it out. You start to embrace the Bramwells. Actually, the Jesus is much better than Bramwell, so it's getting theologically awkward. But you embrace his grace and say, Lord, with your help, help me to live free from this. Help me to seek first your kingdom in all things that I do, in the simple, normal, everyday life. What kind of opportunities may the Lord bring to us for our own lives, for our city? Because we all wrestle with worry. And it seems to me that Jesus wants to help us with that. And as he helps us with that, the goal of this, I don't believe, is that it's not like we're going to live free from it until the Lord returns. But we can lessen its voice. We can, with him, loosen its stranglehold. And we can embrace freedom. And as when we walk in that more and more, in his grace and his love, the Lord will bring across our path people who need to hear it. They need to encounter his love afresh.